to see Mary Agnes and Grady in Panama. Mister seemed to be the only one to understand my feeling. I know you hate me for keeping you from Nettie, he say, and now she dead. But I don't hate him, Nettie, and I don't believe you dead. How can you be dead if I still feel you? Maybe, like God, you changed into something different that I'll have to speak to in a different way. But you're not dead to me, Nettie, and never will be. Sometime when I get tired of talking to myself, I talk to you. I even try to reach our children. Mr. Steele can't believe I have children. Where you get children from? He asked. My stepdaddy, I say. You mean he knowed he was the one damaged you all along? He asked. I say, yeah. Mr. shake his head. After all the evil he done, I know you wonder why I don't hate him. I don't hate him for two reasons. One, he loves Shug. And two, Shug used to love him. Plus, look like he trying to make something out of himself. I don't mean just that he work and he clean up after himself, and he appreciates some of the things God was playful enough to make. I mean when you talk to him now, he really listen. And one time, out of nowhere in the conversation us was having, he said, Celie, I'm satisfied this the first time I ever lived on earth as a natural man. It feel like a new experience. Sophia and Harpo always try to set me up with some man. They know I love Shug, but they think women's love just by accident. Anybody handy likely to do. Every time I go to Harpo's, some little policy salesman get all up in my face. Mister have to come to the rescue. He tell the man, this lady my wife. The man vanish out the door. Us sit, have a cold drink. Talk about our days together with Shug. Talk about the time she come home sick. The little crooked song she used to sing. All our fine evenings down at Harpo's. You was even sewing good way back then, he say. I remember the nice little dresses Shug always wear. Yeah, I say. Shug could wear a dress. Remember the night Sophia knocked Mary Agnes's tooth out? He asked. Who could forget it, I say. Us don't say nothing about Sophia's troubles. Us still can't laugh at that. Plus, Sophia still have trouble with that family. Well, trouble with Miss Eleanor Jane. You just don't know, say Sophia, what that girl done put me through. You know how she used to bother me all the time when she had problems at home? Well, finally she started bothering me when anything good happened. Soon as she snagged that man she married, she come running to me. Oh, Sophia, she said, you just have to meet Stanley Earle. And before I can say anything, Stanley Earle is in the middle of my front room. How you, Sophia, he said, grinning and sticking out his hand. Miss Eleanor Jane done told me so much about you. I wonder if she told him they made me sleep up under their house, say Sophia. But I don't ask. I try to be polite, act pleasant. Henrietta turned the radio up loud in the back room. I have to almost holler to make myself understood. They stand round looking at the children's pictures on the wall and saying how good my boys look in their army uniforms. Where are they fighting? Stanley Earle want to know. They in the service right here in Georgia, I say. But pretty soon, they be bound for overseas. He asked me do I know which part they be stationed in, France, Germany, or the Pacific. I don't know where none of that is, so I said, no. He said he want to fight, but got to stay home and run his daddy's cotton gin. Army got to wear clothes, he say, if they fighting in Europe. Too bad they not fighting in Africa, he laughed. Miss Eleanor Jane smiled. Henrietta turned the dial as high as it can go. Got on some real sorry white folks music. Sound like I don't know what. Stanley Earl snapped his fingers and tried to tap one of his good-sized foots. He got a long head go straight up and a haircut so short it looked fuzzy. His eyes real bright blue and never hardly blink. Good God, I think. Sophia raised me, practically, said Miss Eleanor Jane. Don't know what we would have done without her. Well, says Stanley Earl, everybody round here raised by colored. That's how come we turn out so well. He wink at me, say, well, sugar pie, to Miss Eleanor Jane, time for us to mosey along. She leap up like somebody stuck her with a pin. How Henrietta doing? She asked. Then she whisper, I brought her something with yams so well hid she won't never suspect. She run out to the car and come back with a tuna casserole. Well, says Sophia, one thing you have to say for Miss Eleanor Jane. Her dishes almost always fool Henrietta. And that mean a lot to me. Of course, I never tell Henrietta where they come from. If I did, out the window they would go. Else she'd vomit, like it made her sick. But finally, the end come to Sophia and Miss Eleanor Jane, I think. And it wasn't nothing to do with Henrietta, who hate Miss Eleanor Jane's guts. It was Miss Eleanor Jane herself and that baby she went and had. Every time Sophia turned round, Miss Eleanor Jane was shoving Reynolds Stanley Earl in her face. He a little fat white something without much hair. Looked like he headed for the Navy. Ain't little Reynolds sweet, say Miss Eleanor Jane to Sophia. Daddy just love him, she say. Love having a grandchild named for him and look so much like him, too. Sophia don't say nothing. Stand there ironing some of Susie Q and Henrietta's clothes. And so smart, say Eleanor Jane. Daddy said he never saw a smarter baby. Stanley Earl's mama say he's smarter than Stanley Earl was when he was this age. Sophia still don't say nothing. Finally, Eleanor Jane notice. And you know how some white folks is. Won't let well enough alone. If they want too bad enough, they gonna harass a blessing from you if it kill. Sophia mighty quiet this morning, Miss Eleanor Jane say, like she just talking to Reynolds Stanley. He stared back at her out of his big, stuck-open eyes. Don't you think he's sweet? She asked again. He's sure fat, say Sophia, turning over the dress she ironing. And he's sweet, too, say Miss Eleanor Jane. Just as plump as he can be, say Sophia, and tall. But he's sweet, too, say Eleanor Jane, and he's smart. She haul off and kiss him upside the head. He rub his head, say, yee. Ain't he the smartest baby you ever saw? She asked Sophia. He got a nice size head on him, say Sophia. You know, some people's place a lot of weight on head size. Not a whole lot of hair on it either. He gonna be cool this summer, for sure. She fold the piece she ironed and put it on a chair. Just a sweet, smart, cute, innocent little baby boy, say Miss Eleanor Jane. Don't you just love him? She asked Sophia point blank. Sophia sigh, put down her iron, stare at Miss Eleanor Jane and Reynolds Stanley. All the time, me and Henrietta over in the corner playing pity-pat. Henrietta act like Miss Eleanor Jane ain't alive, but both of us hear the way the iron sound when Sophia put it down. The sound have a lot of old and new stuff in it. No, ma'am, say Sophia. I do not love Reynolds Stanley Earl. Now, that's what you've been trying to find out ever since he was born. And now you know. Me and Henrietta look up. Miss Eleanor Jane, just that quick, done put Reynolds Stanley on the floor where he crawling round knocking stuff over. Head straight for Sophia's stack of iron clothes and pull it down on his head. Sophia take up the clothes, straighten them out, stand by the ironing board with her hand on the iron. Sophia the kind of woman, no matter what she have in her hand, it looked like a weapon. Eleanor Jane start to cry. She always have felt something for Sophia. If not for her, Sophia never would have survived living in her daddy's house. But so what? Sophia never wanted to be there in the first place. Never wanted to leave her own children. "Too late to cry, Miss Eleanor Jane," says Sophia. "All us can do now is laugh." "Look at him," she say, and she do laugh. "He can't even walk, and already he in my house messing it up. Did I ask him to come? Do I care whether he's sweet or not? Will it make any difference in the way he grew up to treat me, what I think?" "You just don't like him 'cause he look like daddy," say Miss Eleanor Jane. "You don't like him 'cause he look like daddy," say Sophia. "I don't feel nothing about him at all. I don't love him. I don't hate him. I just wish he couldn't run loose all the time, messing up folks' stuff."
"All the time, all the time," say Miss Eleanor Jane. "Sophia, he just a baby, not even a year old. He only been here 5 or 6 times.
"I feel like he been here forever," say Sophia.
"I just don't understand," say Miss Eleanor Jane. "All the other colored women I know love children. The way you feel is something unnatural."
"I love children," says Sophia, "but all the colored women that say they love yours is lying. They don't love Reynolds Stanley any more than I do. But if you so badly raised as to ask them, what you expect them to say? Some colored people so scared of white folks they claim to love the cotton gin."
"But he just a little baby," say Miss Eleanor Jane,
like saying this is supposed to clear up everything.
"What you want from me," say Sophia. "I feel something for you because out of all the people in your daddy's house, you showed me some human kindness. But on the other hand, out of all the people in your daddy's house, I showed you some. Kind feeling is all I have to offer you. I don't have nothing to offer your relatives, but just what they offer me. I don't have nothing to offer him." Reynolds Stanley by this time is over on Henrietta, pallet. Looked like trying to rape her foot. Finally, he started to chew her leg, and Henrietta reach up on the windowsill and hand him a cracker.
"I feel like you the only person loved me," say Miss Eleanor Jane. "Mama only loved Junior," she say, "'cause that's who Daddy really love."
"Well," say Sophia, "you got your own husband to love you now."
"Look like he don't love nothing but that cotton gin," she say. 10 o'clock at night, and he's still down there working. When he not working, he playing poker with the boys. My brother see a lot more of Stanley Earle than I do."
"Maybe you ought to leave him," say Sophia. "You got kin in Atlanta. Go stay with some of them. Get a job."
Miss Eleanor Jane toss her hair back, act like she don't even hear this. It's such a wild notion.
"I got my own troubles," say Sophia. "And when Reynolds Stanley grow up, he's gonna be one of them."
"But he won't," say Miss Eleanor Jane. "I'm his mama, and I won't let him be mean to colored."
"You in whose army?" say Sophia. "The first word he likely to speak won't be nothing he learned from you."
"You telling me I won't even be able to love my own son?" say Miss Eleanor Jane.
"No," say Sophia. "That's not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you I won't be able to love your own son. You can love him just as much as you want to, but be ready to suffer the consequences. That's how the colored live."
Little Reynolds Stanley all up on top Henrietta's face by now, just slobbering and sucking, trying to kiss. In a second, I think she gonna knock him silly. But she lay real still while he examined her. Every once in a while, he act like he peeking into her eyeball.
Then he sit down with a bounce on top her chest and grin. He take one of her playing cards and try to give her a bite of it. Sophia come over and lift him off. "He not bothering me," say Henrietta. "He make me tickle."
"He bother me," say Sophia.
"Well,"
Miss Eleanor Jane say to the baby, picking him up,
"we not wanted here."
She say it real sad, like she done run out of places to go.
"Thank you for all you done for us," say Sophia.
She don't look so good herself, and a little water stand in her eyes. After Miss Eleanor Jane and Reynolds Stanley leave, she say, "It's times like this make us know us didn't make this world. And all the colored folks talking about loving everybody just ain't looked hard at what they thought they said."
"So what else new?"
"Well, your sister too crazy to kill herself. Most times I feels like shit, but I felt like shit before in my life, and what happened? I had me a fine sister named Nettie. I had me another fine woman friend named Shug. I had me some fine children growing up in Africa, singing and writing verses. The first 2 months was hell, though, I tell the world. But now Shug's 6 months is come and gone, and she ain't come back. And I try to teach my heart not to want nothing it can't have. Besides, she give me so many good years. Plus, she learning new things in her new life. Now she and Germaine staying with one of her children. Dear Celie," she wrote me, "me and Germaine ended up in Tucson, Arizona, where one of my children live. The other two alive and turned out well, but they didn't want to see me. Somebody told them I lives an evil life. This one say he want to see his mama, no matter what. He live in a little mud-looking house like they have out here, called adobe. So you know I feels right at home. Smile. He a school teacher, too, and work on the Indian reservation. They call him the black white man. They have a word that mean that, too, and it really bother him. But even if he try to tell them how he feel, they don't seem to care. They so far gone, nothing stranger say me nothing. Everybody not an Indian they got no use for. I hate to see his feelings hurt, but that's life. It was Germaine who had the idea to look up my children. He noticed how I always loved dressing him up and playing with his hair. He didn't make it like a mean suggestion. He just said if I knowed how my children was doing, I would probably feel better in my life. This son we staying with is named James. His wife is named Cora May. They have two kids named Davis and Cantrell. He said he thought something was funny about his mama, my mama, 'cause she and Big Daddy was so old and strict and set in their ways. But still, he felt a lot of love from them, he say. Yeah, son, I tell him. They had a lot of love to give. But I needed love plus understanding. They run a little short of that. They been dead now, he say, 9 or 10 years. Sent us all to school as far as they could. You know, I never think about Mama and Daddy. You know how tough I think I is. But now that they're dead and I see my children doing well, I like to think about them. Maybe when I come back, I can put some flowers on their graves. Oh, she write me now near about every week. Long, newsy letters full of stuff she thought she had forgot. Plus, stuff about the desert and the Indians and the Rocky Mountains. I wish I could be traveling with her, but thank God she able to do it. Sometimes I feel mad at her. Feel like I could scratch her hair right off her head. But then I think, Shug got a right to live, too. She got a right to look over the world in whatever company she choose. Just 'cause I love her, don't take away none of her rights. The only thing bother me is she don't never say nothing about coming back. And I miss her. I miss her friendship so much that if she want to come back here dragging Germaine, I'd make them both welcome
or die trying. Who am I to tell her who to love? My job just to love her good and true myself. Mister asked me the other day what it is I love so much about Suge. He say he love her style. He say, to tell the truth, Suge act more manly than most men. I mean she upright, honest, speak her mind, and the devil take the hindmost, he say. You know Suge will fight, he say, just like Sophia. She bound to live her life and be herself, no matter what. Mister think all this is stuff men do. But Harpo not like this, I tell him. You not like this. What Suge got is womanly, it seemed like to me, especially since she and Sophia the ones got it. Sophia and Suge not like men, he say, but they not like women either. You mean they not like you or me. They hold their own, he say, and it's different. What I love best about Suge is what she been through, I say. When you look in Suge's eyes, you know she been where she been, seen what she seen, did what she did, and now she know. That's the truth, say mister. And if you don't get out the way, she'll tell you about it. Amen, he say. Then he say something that really surprised me, 'cause it's so thoughtful and common sense. When it come to what folks do together with their bodies, he say, anybody's guess is as good as mine. But when you talk about love, I don't have to guess. I have love, and I have been love. And I thank God he let me gain understanding enough to know love can't be halted just 'cause some people's moan and groan. It don't surprise me you love Suge Avery, he say. I have loved Suge Avery all my life. What load of bricks fell on you? I asked. No bricks, he say, just experience. You know everybody bound to get some of that sooner or later. All they have to do is stay alive. Then I started to get mine real heavy long about the time I told Suge it was true that I beat you 'cause you was you and not her. I told her, I say. I know it, he say, and I don't blame you. If a mule could tell folks how it's treated, it would. But you know some women's would have just loved to hear their man say he beat his wife 'cause she wasn't them. Suge one time was like that about Auntie Julia. Both of us messed over my first wife a scandalous, and she never told nobody, plus she didn't have nobody to tell. After they married her off to me, her folks behaved like they'd throwed her down a well or off the face of the earth. I didn't want her. I wanted Suge. But my daddy was the boss. He gave me the wife he wanted me to have. But Suge spoke right up for you, Celie, he say. She said, Albert, you've been mistreating somebody I love. So as far as you're concerned, I'm gone. I couldn't believe it, he say. All along in there, we was as hot for each other as two pistols. Excuse me, he say, but we was. I tried to laugh it off, but she meant what she said. I tried to tease her. You don't love old dumb Celie, I said. She ugly and skinny and can't hold a candle to you. She can't even screw. What I want to say that for? From what she tell me, Suge said, she don't have no reason to screw. You on and off like a jackrabbit. Plus, she say, Celie say you not always clean. And she turn up her nose. I wanted to kill you, say mister. And I did slap you around a couple of times. I never understood how you and Suge got along so well together, and it bothered the hell out of me. When she was mean and nasty to you, I understood. But when I looked around and the two of you was always doing each other's hair, I started to worry. She still feel for you, I say. Yeah, he say, She feel like I'm her brother.
What's so bad about that? I asked. Don't her brothers love her?
Them clowns, he say. They still act the fool I used to be.
Well, I say, we all have to start somewhere if us want to do better. And our own self is what us have to hand.
I'm real sorry she left you, Celie. I remember how I felt when she left me. Then the old devil put his arms around me and just stood there on the porch with me, real quiet. Way after while, I bent my stiff neck onto his shoulder. Here us is, I thought. Two old fools left over from love, keeping each other company under the stars.
Other times he wanted to know about my children. I told him, you say they both wear long robes, sort of like dresses.
That was the day he come to visit me while I was sewing and asked me what was so special about my pants.
Anybody can wear them, I said.
Men and women not supposed to wear the same thing, he said. Men supposed to wear the pants.
So I said, you ought to tell that to the men's in Africa.
Say what? He asked.
First time he ever thought about what Africans do.
People in Africa try to wear what feel comfortable in the heat, I say. Of course, missionaries have their own ideas about dress. But left to themselves, Africans wear a little sometimes or a lot, according to Nettie. But men and women both appreciate a nice dress.
Robe, you said before, he say. Robe, dress, not pants, anyhow.
Well, he say, I'll be dog.
And men sew in Africa, too, I say.
They do? He asks.
Yeah, I say. They not so backward as men's here.
When I was growing up, he said, I used to try to sew along with Mama, 'cause that's what she was always doing. But everybody laughed at me. But you know, I liked it.
Well, nobody gonna laugh at you now, I said.
Here, help me stitch in these pockets.
But I don't know how, he say.
I'll show you, I said. And I did.
Now us sit sewing and talking and smoking our pipes.
Guess what, I say to him. Folks in Africa where Nettie and the children is believe white people is black people's children.
No, he say.
Like this interesting, but his mind really on the slant of his next stitch.
They named Adam some other name soon as he arrived. They say the white missionaries before Nettie and them come told them all about Adam from the white folks' point of view and what the white folks know. But they know who Adam is from their own point of view and for a whole lot longer time ago.
And who that? Mister asked.
The first man that was white. Not the first man.
They said nobody's so crazy they think they can say who was the first man. But everybody noticed the first white man 'cause he was white.
Mr. Frown, look at the different color thread us got. Thread his needle, lick his finger, tie a knot.
They say everybody before Adam was black. Then one day some woman they just right away kill come out with this colorless baby. They thought at first it was something she ate. But then another one had one, and also the women started to have twins. So the people started to put the white babies and the twins to death. So really, Adam wasn't even the first white man. He was just the first one the people didn't kill.
Mister looked at me real thoughtful. He not such a bad-looking man, you know, when you come right down to it.
And now it do begin to look like he got a lot of feeling behind his face.
Well, I say, you know black folks have what you call albinos to this day. But you never hear of white folks having nothing black unless some black man been messing with them. And no white folks been in Africa back yonder when all this happened. So these Olinka people heard about Adam and Eve from the white missionaries, and they heard about how the serpent tricked Eve and how God chased them out of the Garden of Eden. And they was real curious to hear this. 'Cause after they had chased the white Olinka children out of the village,
They hadn't hardly thought no more about it. Nettie said one thing about Africans, out of sight, out of mind. And another thing, they don't like nothing around them that look or act different. They want everybody to be just alike. So you know somebody white wouldn't last long. She says seemed like to her, the Africans throwed out the white Olinka peoples for how they look. They throwed out the rest of us, all us who become slaves, for how us act. Seemed like us just wouldn't do right no matter how us try. Well, you know how niggas is. Can't nobody tell them nothing, even today. Can't be rude. Every nigger you see got a kingdom in his head. But guess what else, I say to mister. When the missionaries got to the part about Adam and Eve being naked, the Olinka peoples nearly bust out laughing. Especially when the missionaries tried to make them put on clothes because of this. They tried to explain to the missionaries that it was they who put Adam and Eve out of the village because they was naked. Their word for naked is white. But since they are covered by color, they are not naked. They said anybody looking at a white person can tell they're naked. But black people cannot be naked because they cannot be white. Yeah, say mister. But they was wrong. Right, I said. Adam and Eve prove it. What they did, these Olinka peoples, was throw out their own children just cause they was a little different. I bet they do that same kind of stuff today, mister say. Oh, from what Nettie say, them Africans is a mess. And you know what the Bible say, the fruit don't fall too far from the tree. And something else, I say. Guess who they say the snake is? Us, no doubt, say mister. Right, I say. White folks signed for their parents. They were so mad to get throwed out and told they was naked. They made up their minds to crush us wherever they find us. Same as they would a snake. You reckon? Mister asked. That's what these Olinka people say. But they say just like they know history before the white children start to come, they know the future after the biggest of them leave. They say they know these particular children, and they gonna kill each other off. They still so mad about being unwanted. Gonna kill off a lot of other folk, too, who got some color. In fact, they gonna kill off so much of the earth and the colored that everybody gonna hate them just like they hate us today. Then they will become the new serpent. And wherever a white person is found, he'll be crushed by somebody not white, just like they do us today. And some of the Olinka peoples believe life will just go on and on like this forever. And every million years or so, something will happen to the earth. And folks will change the way they look. Folks might start growing two heads one of these days, for all us know. And then the folks with one head will send them all someplace else. But some of them don't think like this. They think, after the biggest of the white folks no longer on the earth, the only way to stop making somebody the serpent is for everybody to accept everybody else as a child of God or one mother's children, no matter what they look like, or how they act. And guess what else about the snake? What? He asked. These Olinka people worship it. They say, who knows? Maybe it is kinfolks. But for sure, it's the smartest, cleanest, slickest thing they ever seen. These folks sure must have a heap of time just to sit and think, say mister. Netta said they real good at thinking, I say. But they think so much in terms of thousands of years, they have a hard time getting themselves through one. So what they name Adam? Something sound like Omatangu, I say. It mean a unnaked man somewhere near the first one God made that knowed what he was. A whole lot of the men that come before the first man was men, but none of them didn't know it. You know how long it takes some men's to notice anything, I say. Took me long enough to notice you such good company, he say, and he laugh. He ain't shook, but he began to be somebody I can talk to. And no matter how much the telegram said you must be drowned, I still get letters from you. Your sister, Celie. Dear Celie, after 2.5 months, Adam and Tashi returned. Adam overtook Tashi and her mother and some members of our compound as they were nearing the village where the white woman missionary had lived. But Tashi would not hear of turning back, nor would Catherine, and so Adam accompanied them to the Mbele's encampment. "Oh," he says, "it is the most extraordinary place. You know, Celie, in Africa, there is a huge depression in the earth called the Great Rift Valley, but it is on the other side of the continent from where we are. However, according to Adam, there is a small rift on our side, several thousand acres large, and even deeper than the Great Rift, which covers millions of acres. It is a place set so deep into the earth that it can only really be seen, Adam thinks, from the air, and then it would seem just an overgrown canyon. Well, in this overgrown canyon are 1,000 people from dozens of African tribes, and even one colored man, Adam swears, from Alabama. There are farms, there is a school, an infirmary, a temple, and there are male and female warriors who do indeed go on missions of sabotage against the white plantations. But all this seemed more a marvel in the recounting than in the actual experiencing of it. If I am any judge of Adam and Tashi, their minds seem to have been completely riveted on each other. I wish you could have seen them as they staggered into the compound, filthy as hogs, hair as wild as could be, sleepy, exhausted, smelly, God knows, but still arguing. Just because I came back with you, don't think I am saying yes to marriage, says Tashi. Oh, yes, you are, says Adam, heatedly, but through a yawn. You promised your mother. I promised your mother. Nobody in America will like me, says Tashi. I will like you, says Adam. Olivia ran and enfolded Tashi in her arms, ran about preparing food and a bath. Last night, after Tashi and Adam had slept most of the day, we had a family conference. We informed them that because so many of our people had gone to join the Mbeles, and the planters were beginning to bring in Muslim workers from the north, and because it was time for us to do so, we would be leaving for home in a matter of weeks. Adam announced his desire to marry Tashi. Tashi announced her refusal to be married. And then, in that honest, forthright way of hers, she gave her reasons. Paramount among them, that, because of the scarification marks on her cheeks, Americans would look down on her as a savage and shun her and whatever children she and Adam might have. That she had seen the magazines that we received from home, and that it was very clear to her that black people did not truly admire black-skinned black people like herself, and especially did not admire black-skinned black women. They bleach their faces, she said. They fry their hair. They try to look naked. Also, she continued, I fear Adam will be distracted by one of these naked-looking women and desert me. Then I would have no country, no people, no mother, and no husband and brother. You'd have a sister, said Olivia. Then Adam spoke. He asked Tashi to forgive his initial stupid response to the scarification, and to forgive the repugnance he'd felt about the female initiation ceremony. He assured Tashi that it was she he loved, and that in America she would have country, people, parents, sister, husband, brother, and lover, and that whatever befell her in America would also be his own choice and his own lot. Oh, Celie. So the next day, our boy came to us with scars identical to Tashi's on his cheeks. and they are so happy, Celie. Tashi and Adam Omatangu. Samuel married them, of course, and all the people left in the compound came to wish them happiness and an abundance of roof leaf forever. Olivia stood up with the bride, and a friend of Adam's, a man too old to have joined the Mbeles, stood up with him. Immediately after the wedding, we left the compound, riding in a lorry that took us to a boat at the coast inlet that flows out to sea. In a few weeks, we will all be home. Your loving sister, Nettie. Dear Nettie, Mr. talked to Sugar a lot lately by telephone. He say as soon as he told her my sister and her family was missing, she and Jermaine made a beeline for the State Department trying to find out what happened. He says Suge say it just killed her to think I'm down here suffering from not knowing. But nothing happened at the State Department. Nothing at the Department of Defense. It's a big war. So much going on. One ship lost feel like nothing, I guess. Plus, color don't count to those people. Well, they just don't know and never did, never will. And so what? I know you on your way home and you may not get here till I'm 90. But one of these days, I do expect to see your face. Meanwhile, I hired Sophia to clerk in our store. Kept the white man Alfonso got to run it, but put Sophia in there to wait on colored, 'cause they never had nobody in a store to wait on them before, and nobody in a store to treat them nice. Sophia real good at selling stuff, too, 'cause she act like she don't care if you buy or not. No skin off her nose. And then, if you decide to buy anyhow, well, she might exchange a few pleasant words with you. Plus, she's scared that white man. Anybody else colored, he tried to call him auntie or something. First time he tried that with Sophia, she asked him, which colored man his mama's sister marry? I asked Harpo, do he mind if Sophia work? What I'm gonna mind for, he say. It seemed to make her happy. And I can take care of anything come up at home. Anyhow, he say. Sophia got me a little help for when Henrietta need anything special to eat or get sick. Yeah, say Sophia. Miss Eleanor Jane gonna look in on Henrietta and every other day promise to cook her something she'll eat. You know white people have a look of machinery in the kitchen. She whip up stuff with yams you'd never believe. Last week, she went and made yam ice cream. How'd this happen? I asked. I thought the two of you was through. Oh, say Sophia, it finally dawned on her to ask her mama why I come to work for them. I don't expect it to last, though, say Harpo. You know how they is. Do her peoples know? I asked. They know, say Sophia. They're carrying on just like you know they would. Who ever heard of a white woman working for niggers? They rave. She tell them, who ever heard of somebody like Sophia working for trash? She bring Reynold Stanley with her? I asked. Henrietta says she don't mind him. Well, say Harpo, I'm satisfied. If her men folks against her helping you, she gonna quit. Let her quit, say Sophia. It not my salvation she working for. And if she don't learn she got to face judgment for herself, she won't even have lived. Well, you got me behind you anyhow, said Harpo, and I loves every judgment you ever made. He move up and kiss her where her nose was stitched. Sophia toss her head. Everybody learns something in life, she say. And they laugh. Speaking of learning, Mr. say one day us was sewing out on the porch, I first started to learn all them days ago I used to sit up there on my porch staring out across the railing. Just miserable. That's what I was. And I couldn't understand why us have life at all if all it can do most times is make us feel bad. All I ever wanted in life was Suge Avery, he say. And one while, all she wanted in life was me. Well,
Us couldn't have each other, he say. I got Auntie Julia, then you, all them rotten cheering. She got Grady, and who know who all. But still, look like she come out better than me. A lot of people love Suge, but nobody but Suge love me. Hard not to love Suge, I say. She know how to love somebody back. I tried to do something about my cheering after you left me. But by that time, it was too late. Bub come with me for 2 weeks, stole all my money, laid up on the porch drunk. My girls, so far off into men's and religion, they can't hardly talk. Every time they open their mouth, some kind of plea come out. Near about to broke my sorry heart. If you know your heart sorry, I say, that mean it not quite as spoilt as you think. Anyhow, he say, you know how it is. You ask yourself one question, it lead to 15. I start to wonder why us need love, why us suffer, why us black, why us men and women. Where do cheering really come from? It didn't take long to realize I didn't hardly know nothing. And that if you ask yourself why you black or a man or a woman or a bush, it don't mean nothing if you don't ask why you here, period. So what you think? I asked. I think us here to wonder, myself. To wonder. To ask. And that in wondering about the big things and asking about the big things, you learn about the little ones almost by accident. But you never know nothing more about the big things than you start out with. The more I wonder, he say, the more I love. And people start to love you back, I bet, I say. They do, he say, surprise. Harpo seemed to love me. Sophia and the children. I think even old evil Henrietta loved me a little bit. But that's 'cause she knows she's just as big a mystery to me as the man in the moon. Mister is busy patterning a shirt for folks to wear with my pants. Got to have pockets, he say. Got to have loose sleeves. And definitely you're not supposed to wear it with no tie. Folks wearing ties look like they're being lynched. And then, just when I know I can live content without Suge, just when Mr. done asked me to marry him again, this time in the spirit as well as in the flesh, and just after I said, no, I still don't like frogs, but let's us be friends. Suge write me, she coming home. Now, is this life or not? I'd be so calm. If she come, I'd be happy. If she don't, I'd be content. And then I figure this the lesson I was supposed to learn. Oh, silly, she say, stepping out of the car, dressed like a moving star. I missed you more than I missed my own mama. Us hug. Come on in, I say. Oh, the house looks so nice, she say, when us get to her room. You know I love pink. Got you some elephants and turtles coming, too, I say. Where your room? She asks. Down the hall, I say. Let's go see it, she say. Well, here it is, I say, standing in the door. Everything in my room purple and red, except the floor, that painted bright yellow. She go right to the little purple frog perch on my mantelpiece. What this? She asked. Oh, I say, a little something Albert carved for me. She look at me funny for a minute. I look at her, then us laugh. Where Jermaine at? I asked. In college, she say. Wilberforce. Can't let all that talent go to waste. Us through, though, she say. He feel just like family now. Like a son, maybe a grandson. What you and Albert been up to? She asked. Nothing much, I say. She say, I know Albert, and I bet he been up to something, with you looking as fine as you look. So, I say, make idle conversation. How idle? She asked. What do you know, I think, Shug jealous. I have a good mind to make up a story just to make her feel bad, but I don't. Us talk about you, I say. How much us love you. She smile, come put her head on my breast, let out a long breath. Your sister, Celie. Dear God, dear stars, dear trees, dear sky, dear peoples, dear everything, dear God, thank you for bringing my sister Nettie and our children home. Wonder who that coming yonder, asked Albert, looking up the road. Us can see the dust just a-flying. Me and him and Shug sitting out on the porch after dinner, talking, not talking, rocking and fanning flies. Shug mentioned she don't want to sing in public no more. Well, maybe a night or two at Harpo's. Think maybe she retire. Albert say he want her to try on his new shirt. I talk about Henrietta, Sophia, my garden and the store. How things doing generally? So much in the habit of sewing something, I stitch up a bunch of scraps, try to see what I can make. The weather cool for the last of June, and sitting on the porch with Albert and Shug feel real pleasant. Next week be the 4th of July, and us plan a big family reunion outdoors here at my house. Just hope the cool weather hold. Could be the mailman, I say, except he driving a little fast. Could be Sophia, says Shug. You know she drive like a maniac. Could be Harpo, say Albert, but it not. By now, the car stop under the trees in the yard, and all these peoples dressed like old folks get out. A big, tall, white-haired man with a backward-turned white collar, a little dumpty woman with her gray hair and plaits cross on top of her head, a tall, youngish man, and two robust-looking youngish women. The white-haired man say something to the driver of the car, and the car leave. They all stand down there at the edge of the drive, surrounded by boxes and bags and all kinds of stuff. By now, my heart is in my mouth, and I can't move. It's Nettie, Albert say, getting up. All the people down by the drive look up at us. They look at the house, the yard, Shug and Albert's cars. They look round at the fields. Then they commence to walk real slow up the walk to the house. I'm so scared I don't know what to do. Feel like my mind's stuck. I try to speak, nothing come. Try to get up, almost fall. Shug reached down and give me a helping hand. Albert pressed me on the arm. When Nettie's foot come down on the porch, I almost die. I stand swaying between Albert and Shug. Nettie stands swaying between Samuel, and I reckon it must be Adam. Then us both start to moan and cry. Us totter toward one another like us used to do when us was babies. Then us feel so weak when us touch, us knock each other down. But what us care? Us sit and lay there on the porch inside each other's arms. After a while, she say, Celie. I say, Nettie. Little bit more time pass. Us look round at a lot of people's knees. Nettie never let go my waist. This my husband, Samuel, she say, pointing up. These are children, Olivia and Adam,
and this is Adam's wife, Tashi, she say. I point up at my peoples. This Shug and Albert, I say. Everybody say, pleased to meet ya. Then Shug and Albert start to hug everybody, one after the other. Me and Nettie finally get up off the porch, and I hug my children. And I hug Tashi. Then I hug Samuel. Why us always have family reunion on July 4th, say Henrietta, mouth poke out, full of complaint. It's so hot. White people busy celebrating their independence from England July 4th, say Harpo, so most black folks don't have to work. Us can spend the day celebrating each other. Ah, Harpo, say Mary Agnes, sipping some lemonade. I didn't know you knowed history. She and Sophia working together on the potato salad. Mary Agnes come back home to pick up Susie Q. She done left Grady, moved back to Memphis, and live with her sister and her ma. They gonna look after Susie Q while she work. She got a lot of new songs, she say, and not too knocked out to sing 'em. After a while, being with Grady, I couldn't think, she say. Plus, he not a good influence for no child. Course, I wasn't either, she say, smoking so much reefer. Everybody make a lot of admiration over Tashi. People look at her and Adam's scars like that's they business. Say they never suspect African ladies could look so good. They make a fine couple. Speak a little funny, but us getting used to it. What your people love best to eat over there in Africa? Us asked. She sort of blush and say, barbecue. Everybody laugh and stuff her with one more piece. I feel a little peculiar round the children. For one thing, they're grown. And I see they think me and Nettie and Shug and Albert and Samuel and Harpo and Sophia and Jack and Odessa real old and don't know much what's going on. But I don't think us feel old at all. And us so happy. Matter of fact, I think this the youngest us ever felt. Amen. I thank everybody in this book for coming.
You have been listening to The Color Purple by Alice Walker, narrated by the author and directed by Johanna Parker. This book is copyrighted 1982 by Alice Walker, with her preface copyrighted 1992. This recording is copyrighted 2009 by Alice Walker.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.